a talk by Trina Robbins, who I am quite obviously not. Trina Robbins, however, is the foremost historian of comics, and she was inducted into the Will Eisner Hall of Fame in 2013. Her career in comics spans decades and various forms within the medium, from writing to drawing to writing about the medium. And she has always focused on women in her work, from her first all-women underground comic book, It Ain't Me, Babe, in 1970, which carried the subtitle Women's Liberation. In addition to working as a cartoonist, Robbins has also been very, very involved in giving other women in comics a platform to share their work, beginning with the first all-female anthology, Women's Comics, with an X.
No!
No? First?
It Ain't Me, Babe.
It Ain't Me, Babe was the first.
Yes.
The haunted Women's Comics was also the
first.
No,
It Ain't Me, Babe is 1970. Women's is 1972.
I thought they were both the first.
No.
In different areas.
No.
Thank you. So It Ain't Me, Babe was the first, and Women's Comics with an X was also very groundbreaking for being an all-female anthology. And it was also conceived as a platform to showcase new talent in the field. In addition to this, she has promoted the involvement of women in comics in many other ways. For example, through initiatives like Friends of Lulu, which is a nonprofit organization which she started with other female comics professionals in 1994. In addition to this, Robbins has also switched to writing very female-friendly, female-positive stories, such as the series Go Girl, which changed my life when I discovered it as a college student, which is about a female superhero, and scripting Honey West, which is a comic adaptation of the adventures of one of the first female private detectives in the noir genre. She also wrote a Wonder Woman miniseries during the 80s with Kurt Busiek doing the art, and collaborated with Colleen Duran on Wonder Woman Once and Future Story, which addressed the issue of domestic abuse, and designed Vampirella's costume in 1969 as drawn by Frank Frazetta. Robbins first wrote a historical overview of women in comics in the early 1980s when she published Women and the Comics in collaboration with Catherine Ironwood. Since then, she has produced numerous histories, including The Great Women Superheroes, From Girls to Girls, and The Great Women Cartoonists. In addition to allowing women comics of the present day to have a platform, she has also unearthed women cartoonists from the past who, unfortunately, history has tended to forget in her work, such as Nell Brinkley and The New Woman in the Early 20th Century, and Lily Renee Escape Artist, which is the biography of a young Holocaust survivor who went on to become a Golden Age comic book artist. And all of this research has culminated in Pretty in Ink, which you'll be hearing about today, and is the subtitle of North American Women Cartoonists, 1896 to 2013. It was published last year by Fantagraphics, and unfortunately there are no more available copies of it to purchase today.
There will be more tomorrow.
Yes, there will be more tomorrow. So if you want a copy of it, please look for it tomorrow. And has also edited two volumes of Miss Fury, which is an epic adventure series from the 40s featuring like the first costumed female crime fighter in comics.
And there is one copy left on my table.
And there is one copy left. So if you want that, you're going to have to fight each other for it. And it was illustrated by Tarpe Mills, who I've now learned was a very, very interesting character who looks exactly like her heroine. And of course, the collection, The Brinkley Girls, the best of Nell Brinkley's cartoons from 1913 to 1940, which, again, there are no copies of that available.
But it's out of print, but they're reprinting.
Reprinting. We're not sure when, but we hope it will be soon. So it is my express pleasure to introduce Trina Robbins and her talk, Pretty in Ink.
Does anyone see a small manila envelope anywhere?
Was that under my
a quote?
Yes.
Maybe. It's got a quote in it that I need.
It is, in fact. There we go.
Oh, thank you so much. Very small quote that I need. Okay. All right. This is my latest book, as Sarah just told you. There are no copies, but there will be more copies tomorrow. Now, I can't possibly cover the entire book, so I'm just picking out sections that are interesting. For instance, I'm sorry to tell you that if you wanted to know more about Nell Brinkley, I've left her out because I did two entire books about her. So you can find out about Nell. Am I hearable? Does everyone hear me? Good. Okay, this is the first comic by a woman. It's by Rose O'Neill, and it dates to 1896. And I found it. And it's funny, by the way. It's actually funny. You know, sometimes if you look at those old cartoons, they're really weird, like you don't quite get the humor. But this is funny. I don't know if you can read it, but what happens in the first panel is the guy comes in. It's called The Old Subscriber Calls. So he comes in, he says, "Are you the fella that wrote that article about me?" And then he, as you can see, beats him up. And then he walks out, and she says, "Oh, how terrible. For a minute I thought he was going to cancel the subscription." So, like, you know, they were funny. This is Rose O'Neill. Those photos on the side are of Rose O'Neill. She created the Cupies in 1906. And at first they appeared in women's magazines, in two women's magazines, the Ladies' Home Journal and the Woman's Home Companion, which is really interesting because today I don't think that you would have the same art or the same comic appearing in two magazines at the same time. And she did them in, I don't know, do I have an example here? I may. Oh, this is Rose and her sister Callista, and she was, of course, a suffragist, as were her sister, and here they are campaigning for women's suffrage, and Callista is the one wearing the poster. The poster was drawn by Rose O'Neill, of course. This beautiful woman with the tiny waist is Grace Drayton. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice. Grace Drayton created comics starting in 1903. And again, they're really cute. I mean, they're funny. They're actually funny. But, excuse me. The kids she drew, these little roly-poly kids, do they look familiar to you? This little child Toodles here? Anyone? Do they look familiar?
Campbell's Kids?
Yes, the Campbell's Kids. She created the Campbell's Kids, I believe, in 1909. And here's one now. And this is, you know, it's interesting because Campbell's Soup actually wanted to sign a contract saying that she would only draw the Campbell's Kids for them, for Campbell's Soup. But this was the way she drew. So she was extremely prolific. And she drew, you know, scores of cute comics in the newspapers about cute little roly-poly kids, and they all looked like the Campbell Kids, which really was great advertising for Campbell Soup. And she drew until her death in 1946. This is Kate Carew. Kate Carew made her reputation as a caricaturist. She had full pages in the newspapers, in the Sunday papers, in which most of the page would consist of her interview with famous people who came to New York. She was working in New York for the Hearst Syndicate. She interviewed people like Picasso, who said he did not believe that women should have the vote, and the Wright brothers, Mark Twain. In this one, she's interviewing Leon Tolstoy. And so at the bottom, after she did her interview, at the bottom would be this little four-panel strip or three-panel strip about her interviewing these people. And she drew herself, as you can see, incredibly cute with those big glasses and a huge hat, always looking just kind of a little puzzled and a little lost. But she was not. She actually was a bohemian who was married several times, traveled through Europe, and settled down in Carmel, California, which was an artist's colony at the time. You can see here's an ad. She also drew, look, I love the way she drew herself.
She also drew, she would review the latest play and draw caricatures of the artists, the actors. And she did do a strip, The Angel Child. In this period, this is like the early, very early 20th century, you know, comics have a fashion, they have a cycle. And in this period, what was really in style was cute children. Not just by women. Al Colt, you know, did Buster Brown. It was, everyone did cute children. But her child, the angel child, is wretched. She's dreadful. She's really awful. And that she always manages to do something terribly wrong. And that ratty-looking dog is in all the strips, too. This is Marjorie Morgan. Excuse me. Again, this is not even the teens. This is not even the tens. It's really early. She did a strip, a regular syndicated strip. She lived in San Francisco. Little Reggie and the Heavenly Twins. Reggie is this short little guy who adores these perfect women and never winds up with them. Of course, they always wind up with really handsome men. But the interesting, well, so much is interesting, but Marjorie Morgan. This is Marjorie Morgan. And you can find this painting in the San Francisco de Young Museum of Art. It's painted by Robert Henri, who was her husband, and a very famous portrait painter. And when they married, it created a real scandal because she was a, excuse me, a 20-year-old cartoonist, and he was a 40-year-old fine artist, really accepted by, you know, by society. And it's really cool, you know, because I can go, it's called Portrait of Miss O, so you don't really know who she is, but I know. And I can go to the de Young Museum, and if you ever go to San Francisco, visit the de Young Museum, and there she stands. It's a large, large portrait. And people look at it and say, how pretty, but they don't know who she was. But if you go, you'll know she was Marjorie Morgan. This is Faye King. Faye King came from Colorado, also to work for the Hearst Syndicate. Hearst, by the way, his politics may have been pretty crummy, but he had really good taste in comics, and he had only the best cartoonists working for him. She came in 1912, and the day she arrived, she wondered that no one was paying attention to her. She walked in and said, here I am, you sent for me. And everybody was too busy and talking and ignoring her, and she finally said, what's happening? You know, I've come here to work for the Hearst Syndicate. And they said, haven't you heard? The Titanic sank. So that was not a good day to make her introduction. She did these, I would call them, they're kind of like cartoons and commentary. She did them in strip form, but underneath was commentary. And Nell Brinkley did that too. There were a lot of artists who did really commentary that they illustrated. And she drew, you know, kind of realistically, this is from the 30s, but when she drew herself, as you can see, she drew herself as this olive oil looking character. I like the way they cartooned themselves, you know, the way Kate Carew drew herself. The way Faye King drew herself. This is Ethel Hayes in 1918 teaching wounded veterans how to draw, giving them drawing lessons. Just around when the teens became the 20s, styles changed again. We were into our, we'd gone from Art Nouveau to Art Deco, and instead of drawing those cute little kids, they drew flappers. Not everyone, but a lot of the women drew flappers. The flappers were the new woman. They had the vote. They got the vote in 1920. They threw away their corsets. For the first time, they were wearing knee-length skirts. They'd gone from floor-length skirts to knee-length. Well, someone open that door for that person. Thank you. They bobbed their hair. They were new. They were different. They smoked and drank for the first time. I mean, before that, not that smoking is good for you. It's terrible for you, but they didn't know. But before that, only loose women smoked. Or if you you smoked and you were not a loose woman. You did it like in secret in your home, in your drawing room or something. So she was really the quintessential flapper cartoonist. She drew in a very Art Deco style. I think that you can see a lot of John Hill Jr. influence in her work. And she also, excuse me, like Grace Drayton, she was extremely prolific. She did this strip called Flapper Fanny. It was daily, a single panel cartoon. But she did so much. She did so many full Sunday pages, and she also illustrated children's books and did paper dolls. So she passed this strip on. It's a nice example of women passing strips on to women. She passed it on to Sylvia Snyderman. And Sylvia Snyderman did it for a while. Now, by the way, that Flapper Fanny was from about 1926. This is the early 30s at this point. Sylvia Snyderman passed it on to Gladys Parker. And Gladys Parker turned it into a comic. And by the end of the 30s, the flapper was over. You know, you just didn't, flapper was passe. But Gladys Parker was drawing the strip and she didn't want to stop. So she gave it a new name and continued it. It became Mopsy. Gladys Parker is extremely interesting, not only because she's another woman cartoonist who looked like her character, she did look like Mopsy, but she had two careers. One was as an extremely successful cartoonist drawing Mopsy, and the other, she was a fashion designer. She had a line of clothes. She was very well known as a fashion designer. This is from Look magazine in 1939. She's wearing an outfit she drew. She specialized in slacks, which was very advanced in those days. And she's wearing an outfit she drew, she made, she designed. And I love the little heart on her pocket. She's wearing her heart on her sleeve. Now back to flapper cartoonists. Oh, thank you very much. This is Virginia Huger, and look at her. I mean, she is the quintessential flapper, isn't she? That hat is so far down you can't even see her eyes. Look at that great dress. It's perfect flapper, and she was a flapper cartoonist. She did a full-color Sunday page. Babs in Society was only one of them. She did a lot. She was extremely prolific. This is a charming strip she did. Babs is just a shop girl, and she inherits her rich uncle dies, who she never even knew about, and suddenly she's rich, and it's about this perfectly ordinary girl in society, shocking the pants off these very boring, with their nose in the air, society people. And it's very good, the art is fabulous, and it's funny. She also, I mean, these women, a lot of these women did more than just, you know, with Grace Drayton, she drew the Campbell kids. Virginia Huger did ads for Lux soap, and she did them in comic form. Peggy Lux is her heroine. And it's very funny because she always solves the problem at the end by telling the women that if they just wash their hose and their undies in Lux soap, then the stockings won't run and everyone will live happily ever after. And paper dolls too. Here's Edwina Dom in her studio, and I am making a guess that she did not ordinarily wear that white coat and those white shoes, because look at all the ink in her brush. I think she's doing it just for the photographer. Edwina Dom started out actually in the teens as far as is known, America's first woman political cartoonist. But by the 20s and by the 30s and through the 60s, she was drawing a strip called Tippy. Sometimes it was called Cap Stubbs and Tippy. And Tippy is a little dog. And she was actually, you know, there's the cute little children people were drawing, there's the flowers people were drawing. She was on her own. She was the quintessential dog cartoonist. And Tippy was extremely famous, extremely successful, to the point where he had sheet music. There was sheet music about Tippy. And here's Edwina with her dog. She had a series of dogs that looked like Tippy, and she drew those dogs over and over again. This is the 40s. And here is a book she illustrated. and short stories about dogs in World War I called Verdun Bell. She illustrated books. This beautiful woman in her fabulous fur coat is Dale Messick, who created Brenda Starr. Now, Dale has a story that she likes to tell. Well, liked. She passed away at the age of almost 100 in 2006. She used to like to talk about how she was born Dahlia Messick and couldn't sell her strips. And she changed her name to Dale, which was more sexually ambiguous, and was able to sell her strip because they thought she was a man. This is not quite true. Here's some of her earlier strips. Unsold. This is from the middle 30s. This is from the later 30s. I think you can see that it's already signed Dale Messick. So she signed her stuff. The only one that she really saw signed by her original name, Dahlia Messick, was one from 1926 that she did right out of high school. The later strips, she'd already changed her name and they were being rejected anyway. Why? I mean, the art is great. She's great. Why were they rejected? Because it was obvious that she was a woman. She could have called herself Thomas Messick, but they still would have known just by looking at the art, this is drawn by a girl. When she finally sold Brenda Starr, and this is one of the first Brenda Starrs, they used to be run in the newspapers where you would have to cut them out and fold them and staple them together, and you got a little six-page comic book. This is one of the original Brenda Starrs, the early Brenda Starrs. Captain Joseph Patterson, who was the publisher and the owner of the Chicago Tribune Syndicate, originally rejected her. And the reason he gave for rejecting her was that he had had a woman cartoonist once and she had not worked out. But his girl Friday saw the strip on the rejection pile, and she knew it had possibilities, and she contacted Dale, and together they worked on it, and they produced Brenda Starr, and this time it sold. And Brenda Starr lasted with three different women cartoonists, just like Flapper Fanny, lasted till from 1940 till 2011, when it finally folded. Okay, now we're in the 40s. Something happened. The war happened. And comics changed again. And also, we're moving on to comic books now, too, because comic books started in the 30s. The men, most of them quite young, who were drawing comics, either enlisted or were drafted and went off to fight the war. And as in every other industry, women took their place. I'm sure the same thing happened in Canada, right?
Yes.
So women were suddenly drawing comic books, and more women than ever before, were working in comics. And what they were drawing, action heroines, suddenly, instead of smart little flappers or cute little kids, they were drawing real women, you know, beautiful women who fought back, who fought the Nazis, who didn't have to be rescued by men. This is by Jill Elgin, and it's one of the best. I really love this because the girl commandos are a whole group of women, each one from a country that was being occupied by the Nazis, each one from an occupied country, fighting back. And their leader was Pat Parker, and she was British. So it's a whole United Nations of girl commandos, and I love that concept. And Mopsy, remember Gladys Parker? Mopsy joined the armed forces. She became a WAC. Everybody was in on the action. Gladys Parker also took over Flying Jenny, which was about an aviatrix, again, fighting Nazis. Flying Jenny was originally drawn by and created by Russell Keaton, but he was drafted, and she took over the strip. And suddenly, because she took over the strip, it has paper dolls. Because paper dolls somehow is code that this is a strip by women that girls and women will like. Because little boys tend not to want to cut out and dress up paper dolls. Of course, there are exceptions. And Gladys Parker, still designing clothes. Here is designing an outfit to wear in your bomb shelter. What the well-bombed woman will wear. This is Ruth Atkinson. While all these women were drawing beautiful action heroines who were courageous and fought back and didn't need to be rescued by men, she was drawing airplanes. Isn't that cool? You don't expect women to draw planes. But that was part of the, you know, what people were interested in during the war. So she worked for a company called Fiction House. Fiction House is my favorite Golden Age publisher. And if I could go back in time, I would go back to 1942 and work for Fiction House. They hired, at a time when all these publishers were now hiring women, because the guys were all fighting the war, they hired more women than anybody else. And what all of these women drew were heroines, were courageous, beautiful women who could fight back and who didn't need to be rescued by guys. This is Camilla by Marcia Snyder, a jungle queen. This is Glory Forbes by Fran Hopper. She was a girl detective. And this is Lily Renee, working at Fiction House, at the Fiction House offices. Lily fascinates me. Her story, her life story, could have been a comic book, and in fact, it was, because I did a graphic novel about her. For younger readers, but grown-ups like it too, it's called Lily Renee, Escape Artist. She was a refugee. She was a Jewish teenager in Austria when the Nazis marched in 1938. By 1939, she escaped to England via kinder transport. Does anyone here know what kinder transport was? It was a wonderful thing that England did. It was I consider it a gold star in England's history. When the Nazis started marching into the other countries, they could see how they were treating the Jews, and they could foresee that it would be worse. They were not yet at war with Germany. They made an arrangement with Germany that they would take Jewish children from the occupied countries as long as the kids could find a sponsor, someone to say, yes, they can live with me and I will support them. And they rescued tens of thousands of Jewish children before finally it ended when they declared war on Germany in 1940. And she was one of the rescued kids. She wound up in New York. Happy ending, by the way. Her parents escaped to America and found her. They had a hunt for her, you know, because they lost all contact when the war was declared. Neither of them, neither her parents nor she, knew if the others were dead or alive. But they found her. They found her in England, sent for her. She came to America. She was an artist. She was young, but she was an artist. She was about 18. And they were living hand to mouth. They had been very well off. But they had to leave everything behind, of course. They lost everything. So they were just doing whatever they could to survive. And her mother saw an ad in the paper that said that a certain comic book company, Fiction House, was looking for artists. And Lily said, I've never drawn a comic in my life. And her mother said, well, try. And so she went to the newsstand, bought a couple of comics, drew some sample panels, and got the job. This is Jane Martin. Jane Martin was a flying nurse. She started off as a nurse and became an aviatrix, fighting again, fighting the Axis. And she drew many more, but I mean, it'll take forever if I get into that. I want to show you one of my discoveries for this book. This is Eva Mirabal, and I'm very sorry that her picture wound up on the cutting room floor. It was edited out. But look at her, isn't she wonderful? She was a Taos Native American, and she was a WAC, and she drew comics for the WAC newspaper, G.I. Gertie. And when she started, she was PFC Eva Mirabal, then she became Corporal Eva Mirabal, and by the time she was mustered out in 1946, she was signing her comics Sergeant Eva Mirabal. She did not go on to draw comics. She became a muralist and a poster artist. You can find her murals in New Mexico. This is a poster she did during the war. It's signed by her Native American name. So you can see she did a lot of Native American work. Okay, the war ends. And here's Mopsy again. It's over. She wants to lose the muscles she developed on her war job. It's over. Women are sent back to the kitchens. The boys came back. They wanted their jobs back. Here's Ruth Atkinson, who drew the airplanes. She's literally back in the kitchen. Okay, there were still... let's go back to Ruth Atkinson. Because what happened was, all those wonderful, courageous heroines died when the women stopped drawing them. That was the end of them. There were no more of these fabulous, fighting, gorgeous, fighting women. But there were still places for women to draw comics, still different comics. And one of them was teenage comics. This is Hilda Terry, who did a strip called Tina. Actually, it started during the war, but the new character that people were drawing, you know, Flapper was over, the fabulous fighting woman was over, teenagers were the new thing. Remember Virginia Huger? This is a teenage strip she was doing, and she was now signing her work Virginia Clark, which was her maiden name. Remember Ruth Atkinson, who I showed you back in the kitchen? This is Patsy Walker, drawn by her. 1945. And Patsy Walker, drawn by Fran Hopper. They were still drawing, you know, but like the wonderful girl commandos were over. You know, it was a different feeling. And the feeling was, well, no, we want you to be more girly. We don't want you to be as powerful anymore. Kitty, drawn by Lily Renee. And remember those girl commandos drawn by Jill Elgin? This is what she wound up doing. This is from Little Women. She wound up illustrating girls' books. Those fabulous girl commandos who I love so much. And it's not like there's anything wrong with the art, and there's nothing wrong with Little Women either. I mean, I cried when Beth died, always. But the change. The other thing, of course, that they were allowed to draw, love comics. And this is by Ruth Atkinson again. You can see she signed it for me. If you really read those romance comics, and they were all from the late 40s, so the war had really just ended, late 40s, very early 50s, they have a message. And that message is that no matter who you are and no matter what you do, you're not going to find true happiness until you meet the right man and marry and settle down and have kids. Because that's what they wanted women to do after the war. Virginia Clark again. Remember Virginia Clark? Now she's drawing romance comics. Virginia Clark, who was Virginia Huger, the quintessential flapper. Okay, women didn't last in romance comics either, though. At a certain point, they just were not being given the work. Remember, they were freelancers. So it wasn't that they were given pink slips and fired. They just were not given the work anymore. Men were given the work. This is by Elizabeth Berube, and she was the last woman to draw for romance comics. This is from the early 70s, and she has this wonderful style that's a combination of Art Nouveau and Art Deco. And she would do single pages like this, you know, fashion pages and beauty pages. And she did do at least one six-page comic. And after that, romance comics were over. Nothing was left but superheroes. And there were two women, drawing superhero comics. One was Marie Severin, and the other was Ramona Freyden. One worked for Marvel, the other worked for DC, and never the twain met. They had never met each other until the 80s, I believe, or maybe even the 90s, when they were both guests at a comic convention. And then, of course, they became good friends. Okay, so what's a girl to do? You know, there's nothing to draw but superheroes, and most women, even Ramona Freyden, drew this funny stuff. She has told me that that's what she liked best, was all the light stuff. And she always felt like a fish out of water in superhero comics. And most women are really not only not interested in, but almost not capable of drawing guys with big chins and too many muscles punching each other. You know, this isn't what women are interested in either drawing or reading. So what's a girl to do? So this was just about the time when underground comics started. 1970, It Ain't Me, Babe, the first all-woman comic book that I produced. What happened was I was living in San Francisco, which was supposed to be the mecca of underground comics, and it was the mecca if you were a guy, but not if you were a girl. There were two of us, me and a woman named Willie Mendez, who eventually went on to fine art. She's a very good painter. She has a gallery in Los Angeles, but she left comics. And if I had any sense, I would have left them too, but I don't have any sense. But I produced the first all-woman comic. I found, this is 1970, the Women's Liberation Movement. I joined a newspaper that was coming out of Berkeley, California, called It Ain't Me, Babe. It was the first feminist newspaper, I learned later. At the time, I thought it was only the first one on the West Coast, but I've been told by no less than Robin Morgan that it was the first in the whole country. So because I was working with them and I had their moral support, I was strong enough to produce this first comic. 2 years later, there were enough women so the 10 women could gather in the house of a woman named Patty Moodian and produce an ongoing anthology, Women's Comics. This is the first issue. It's drawn by Patty Moodian. And we dealt with subjects that the guys were not interested in dealing with. This is a good example by Shari Flanagan. It's from 1976, which was the bicentennial of the revolution. And there's Betsy Ross, who had hoped to lead the troops up Bunker Hill. I think it's Bunker Hill, am I right? Because I can barely read it here. And George Washington brings her the fabric for the flag instead and says, "How can you have it ready by next week?" As you can see, she's not happy. Okay, so suddenly there were underground comics and they were being done by women. So Mary Wings, who was a lesbian cartoonist, saw women's comics, and in fact she saw the first comic that I had done for women's comics, which was the first comic about a lesbian ever. And she was very indignant because it was very obviously drawn by a heterosexual woman. And she said, no, this is wrong. Lesbians must draw their own comics, and she produced Come Out Comics. And the second one, too, called Dyke Shorts, a year after this. This is 1974. And this is also 1974, Dynamite Damsels by Roberta Gregory. We had been criticized. Women's comics had been criticized. We were called heterosexist because we didn't have any lesbians drawing comics for us. But of course, that's because no lesbians had sent in any work. You know, we were open to anything. And finally, Roberta Gregory sent us a really, really good comic that was kind of a lesbian parody of Love Comics. And we printed it, not because, oh, we must have a lesbian, but because she was damn good, and she is damn good. And this gave her, just like I finally had the moral support from the staff of an Ain't Me Babe newspaper, she had felt that she finally had the moral support to produce her own book. And it's really a toss-up as to which came first, Mary Wings's Come Out Comics or Roberta Gregory's Dynamite Damsels. They came out around the same time. So those would be the first lesbian comics. Okay. Women's comics lasted until 1992. So that's pretty good, 20 years. This is the last issue. The cover is by Karen Lesham. And this is what she wrote in her editorial. She wrote, "This comic has been printed on cheap paper, which will turn yellow in a few years. The print run was too small, and all the stores, as usual, will sell out, but they won't reorder because women don't buy comics." Bullshit. How did they sell out in the first place? And that, of course, was our problem, and she just had it in a nutshell. All the comic book stores at this point in the 90s and the 80s, too, of course, they all specialized in superheroes. They all sold comics to boys, and they had a very forbidding attitude towards girls, many of them. And there was no distribution, so that's why women's comics ended. Now, I'm not bringing it on to today, because if you want to know what women are drawing comics today, you just have to go to that library where all the convention's taking place right now, and you'll see, you know, more women than ever before, far more than during the war when they had more women then than ever before, far more, more women truly than ever before, and there are going to be more and more and more. And they're drawing comics, and the comics are really good. So I'm just going to end it with this. This is the Women Cartoonists, the Women's Comics, Women Cartoonists, in 1975. We have an exhibit at a gallery. It's a group photo. The man in the back is Ron Turner, who published us. I'm there in between two women, kind of peering out from between two women. At your right, it's my left. Okay, then in 2012, it was our 40th anniversary. We had a huge exhibit in the San Francisco main branch of the Public Library, and here we all are again, and the man in the back who looks like Santa Claus is Ron Turner. And there I am, again, peering out from between two women. I always seem to wind up peering out from between two women. So this is a good place to end it. You know, here we are, we're all still here, and we're all mostly still alive. Now, I hope that we'll do an interview with Joanna Carlson-Drinker, and thank you. You know what, I think I'll just leave it on this picture because it's such a positive picture. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. So my first question is, you've written several notable books about women's comic history. Mm-hmm. Why the new one?
Because Gary Groth asked me to. And really, I did have more information. And my last book, the book before that, which was published by Houghton Mifflin, and you know, I thought, wow, this is the big time. I was so excited, a major New York publisher, was chock full of typos, which were all the editor's fault. Worst editor I have ever had, worst experience ever in doing a book. Up until then, at least, my worst experience. My editor's name was Candy, spelled with an I, and I just can say, never work with an editor who spells her name with an I. She was either addicted to cocaine or she was sleeping with the boss, because she was a terrible editor. And the book is full of typos, which were not my fault, but were the editor's fault. So this book has not one typo in it, because God bless Fantagraphics. I mean, they are so good, and they produce such good books.
Mm-hmm. What has changed? There was mention in some of the promo material that you'd learned new things.
I did learn new things. For instance, there was a man who was in all my other books who signed, his first name was Claire, and it turned out, of course, he was a man and not a woman, so he's not in this book. But who is in this book is Eva Mirabal, who, you know, wow, at last, a Native American woman cartoonist. Much more information about a lot of the others, including photos. I'm so sorry that they didn't use that photo of Eva Mirabal, because to me, it's really great to be able to connect a face to the artwork. Mm-hmm. But at least I was able to show it here.
Yes. How did you get started in researching these women, and why?
Oh, wow. Okay, that was the 80s, you know, and we didn't have computers yet. And the first book, I did it with Catherine Ironwood. I was just sick of being told that, you know, women don't read comics, women don't draw comics, women have never drawn comics. All of the histories of comics were all about guys, and at the most, they might give one or two pages to women. They would say, well, there were some women who drew comics too, and they included a couple of women. You know, nothing, really. And I knew that that was not true. So I did it for Eclipse. Catherine Ironwood was the editor, Dean, and my co-writer. Dean Mullaney was the publisher. And we worked on what we could find, which was not much. And there's a lot of misinformation in that book, simply because the research we did contained a lot of misinformation. For instance, about Nell Brinkley, one of our primary sources. You know, in those days, I mean, like I say, there was no computer, there was no internet. You had to send for things, and they would arrive in the mail. You know, remember the mail? There was an organization, a club, really, in Los Angeles that collected and wrote about early 20th century illustrators. So they had, and they would do a small book about each one, and they did one on Neil Brinkley. So we ordered it and got it, and it was full of misinformation, which we did not know at the time. They said, for instance, that she was a Republican, but if you had seen the talk I gave on Political Now, you would know she was never a Republican. She was a feminist. She was a suffragette. In the 30s, she absolutely adored Eleanor Roosevelt. This woman was not a Republican. They even got her hair color wrong. They said she was a brunette, and she was blonde. She used to describe herself as a towhead. So a lot of our information was wrong, including the guy who did comics under a woman's name. So the other problem with that book was the great Guerneville flood of 1985. The book came out in 85, and as soon as it came out, a lot of copies were shipped to the various comic book stores, you know, pre-ordered, and then along came, and they were in Guerneville, which is on the Russian River in California, close to San Francisco, but not too close. And there was a flood, and the river flooded, and all of their books were stored in the basement. So every remaining copy of Women and the Comics was turned into papier-mâché, which means that, you know, these books are harder than hen's teeth to find. So I was very happy in 1996 to do a rewrite with Kitchen Sink. Excuse me, with Dennis Kitchen of Kitchen Sink. And at that point, I already had more information that I was able to put in. I was able to correct some of the misinformation. I guess go on to the 21st century, how Mifflin wanted to do it. And, you know, I was thrilled. You know, wow, Houghton Mifflin, a big New York publisher. And they did the worst job of any book I've ever done. And it was my completely awful editor. And then Gary Roth asked me to do this one. So I said, great, because this is a way for me to fix all the horrible typos in the Houghton Mifflin book, and also at this point I had arrived at so much more information. But that's it, because how many times can you write about women cartoonists? I have called this my final and definitive book, and it is.
What did you learn that surprised you most?
I don't think anything surprised me. I knew these women had been there. Mm-hmm. It was fun discovering them. I did make some interesting discoveries, like Grace Drayton. Her sister also drew comics. And her sister's daughter, Mary A. Hayes, also drew comics. They were not as good as her, but they were good enough to be published, and they worked in a very similar style to Grace Drayton. So connecting the three of them was, you know, it was a case of sisterhood and niecehood being powerful. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
It seemed to me, reading this, that the comic strips were perhaps a bit more accepting to women artists.
They were.
Than the comic
they were.
Books.
Yes.
Do you think that's a function of the style, the time period that was involved, the format?
I think the time period has a lot to do with, no one had yet decided that women couldn't draw comics. So women did draw comics, and no one said you can't.
So, on that note, I know we're running a little short on time. I wanted to see if the audience had any questions for you. So we have a gentleman here.
Right away.
Hi, Trina. Hi, Kim.
You've talked a lot about women who create comics. During the course of my career, I've been blessed with three wonderful women editors, Kat Arnwood, Dan Schutz, and Karen Berger. Could you perhaps talk a bit about women who are actually also involved in creating comics?
Diana Schutz is actually the editor on the book that I'm working on now, which is my memoirs. Can I talk about women editors and women publishers? I feel, I'm sorry to tell you this, Ken, but in the past, in the 80s and 90s, they were not particularly friendly to women. Most of them, the ones who were working for the mainstream comics, If you didn't do that particular kind of work, if you didn't draw the big jaw guys punching each other out, or women with giant breasts, they were not interesting. They were not supportive. I think a lot of them were a little afraid. They'd be on panels and they'd say, there's no sexism in comics. They'd say, no, there's work for everyone. They were afraid of losing their jobs and their positions. So no, I'm sorry to tell you, Cat is a big exception. Cat was great. But for the most part, and of course Eclipse was indie, so they were different, you know. For the most part, they were not supportive.
Do you think that's changed?
I don't know. I don't know. Comics have changed. So maybe, you know, now DC, Vertigo can hire women, Marvel can hire women, and the women are not, the women who hire them are no longer afraid of losing their jobs.
Mm-hmm. So, was there another question from the audience?
Yes, all the way in the back first.
Okay. Have you, I've seen you on documentaries and such before talking about superheroes and the way that women are designed and portrayed in mainstream comics. Have you ever thought about taking on a character like Wonder Woman or doing your own?
I would love to do Wonder Woman, but DC will never, ever hire me. Yes.
Oh, I just wanted to ask if you had to, I guess one thing I've really been interested in reading some of the work of older women, like women cartoonists who are working in the 30s and 40s, but I find sometimes like, I don't get the jokes or I don't really understand what's going on. Is there a particular cartoonist that you can recommend from that sort of time period who would be, who you think transcends that sort of, you know?
Well, you know, they weren't all funny, especially the ones from the 40s when they were doing these wonderful, courageous women. I would recommend, and if you like the 40s, I would recommend that you check out the work of the Fiction House women that I have shown, like Marcia Snyder and Fran Hopper and Lily Renee. I probably shouldn't even talk about this yet because I haven't signed any contracts, but I have been talking with a publisher about putting together a collection of women who drew comics during the war, and those three women and maybe a couple of others would be reprinted.
That would be very exciting. One of the most frustrating things about the book is that due to space, yeah, you're only able to show a strip by...
That's right. However, I have put together a collection of the work of Lily Renee as a book, which you can download free on my website.
Ooh.
Yes, everyone should know that. If you want to see the great stuff that Lily Renee did in the 40s, you can download it free. My website is very simple to remember. It's TrinaRobbins.com. And as soon as you open it, you'll see the thing about Lily Renee and the little thing to click on, and voila. So check it out.
Weren't you also, didn't you also write an introduction for a Miss Fury reprint?
I wrote introductions for both Miss Fury reprints. Those are my books.
Okay.
IDW published them. There's only one left for sale on my table, so I'll hold the others. It's from my collection. I have a almost complete collection of Miss Fury. I don't have many of the later ones, which are not as good anyway, but I have almost all the early ones. And between me and Dean Mullaney, who was able to get the missing pages, mm-hmm, we put together a beautiful book.
Excellent.
And that's Dean who did the gorgeous design work.
And you also just mentioned you're working on a memoir?
Yes, I am.
Is there anything more you can say about that?
Well, you'll find out a lot of things that you might have wanted to know. How's that?
Do you have a time frame or a publisher?
I asked. Yes, Denny's Kitchen is publishing it. Kitchen Sink is now a division of Dark Horse.
Oh.
And they're publishing it, and I asked him to give me a year. I'm almost embarrassed to say that I'm up to page 15. But no, give me a year. Don't worry, it'll be out.
Excellent. Was there another? Yes, ma'am.
Could you talk a little bit more about how the hard work you do doing research and locating these women artists and identifying them and then finding their work?
You know, research is a pleasure. It's not hard work. I love it. I almost would rather do research than write. And I love writing. But research, oh boy, an opportunity to do more research. By tomorrow I may not have any voice anymore. It's detective work. Detective work you know, when I do this research on my girl detective, okay, good example is Fran Hopper. Now, someone else, a wonderful woman named Samantha Meyer, who writes about comics and blogs and stuff, she, we've spoken a lot via email and even in person, and she found Fran Hopper for me. She did that girl detective stuff. She found, what she found was the obituary, Fran Hopper's husband's obituary, and I took it from there. It talked about survivors, including his wife, Frances Hopper, and their children, and one of them was a doctor. And you can always find doctors on the internet. So I found him on the internet, and there was a phone number, and I called. It was his office, or the hospital, I think, where he worked. And I was told that he had actually retired, but he came in once a week. And I left a message, and he was very excited and called back. And Fran is, at the time she was 90, she's about 92 now. She was living in a retirement home in New Jersey. I went to New York. It was an all-day trip. I went to New York, I took a train to middle of nowhere, New Jersey, where her daughter-in-law picked me up and drove me for another 45 minutes to this retiring home, which is end of nowhere, New Jersey. Spent the day with Fran, and it was one thing that I had always been curious about. I mean, she signed her fiction house work, but the Patsy Walker pages were not signed, and I looked at them, I said, I know this is Fran Hopper. I know it's Fran Hopper. So I brought them to her. She had very bad eyes, but she had a big magnifying glass, and she looked at them, and she said, I drew them. So that this book is the first one that credits her with the Patsy Walker. Yes?
I just want to testify to how good you are at research, because one of the greatest collaborations of my career was the best book we did together. And you provided me with a binder full of, you know, material about the fashions and the, you know.
I always send reference. Ken Stacy illustrated this graphic novel I did about Bessie Coleman, who was the first African-American woman to win her pilot's license. And they wouldn't teach her in America. She had to go to France to get her pilot's license. And Ken did a beautiful job. And I always send tons of reference. But not everyone is as nice as Ken. And I've had horror stories, but I don't think we have the time for the horror stories, about guys who took my reference and just basically tossed it over their shoulders and decided, well, if it's long ago, we'll give her a long skirt and it'll be okay.
I was very excited to find that women can draw airplanes.
That women
can draw airplanes.
Yeah. You see?
And unfortunately, I think that will bring us to a close. Thank you very much
for
sharing your work with us. And you have a table?
Yes, I do. It's table 21. Well, it ends at 5 o'clock today. Well, it's time. There's still time for you to get the last Miss Fury book.
And thank you very much for coming.